Episode 123 of the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast is brought to you courtesy of Fish Nerds. The Fish Nerds Podcast is the fishing podcast for anyone who wants to fish better, laugh more, and learn a little. They talk about all things fish, fishing, and eating fish, with a focus on conservation and sustainability. The show is usually funny, always interesting, and mostly true. Before we get to my Fish Nerds interview, I want to shout out one last reminder to all of my amazing listeners. The Outdoor Minimalist Podcast was nominated for Best Podcast of 2023 by the Outdoor Media Awards. I'm so honored to be nominated and on the list of productions, so thank you to everyone who made that nomination possible. Once a podcast is nominated, it is up to people's choice who wins. So while we have a very engaged and dedicated audience, we are one of the smaller podcasts on the list. So today I'm making a final plea for votes. All you have to do is follow the link to the Facebook voting page. You do need Facebook to cast a vote. So if you don't, thanks for listening. And then once you're on the Facebook poll, you just need to scroll down, find Outdoor Minimalist, and click the box to the left of the name. Right now, we are in the top 6, which really blows my mind, but we still need several votes to make it to the top. The voting ends on February 1st at noon, so if you have 15 seconds to spare, please follow the link in the show notes and vote for Outdoor Minimalist.
Hey, everybody, I'm so excited to have with me in Glasswater Studios this morning a young lady that is out to make a difference in the way we approach the outdoors. She is an outdoor writer who has published her first book entitled Outdoor Minimalist, Waste Less Hiking, Backpacking, and Camping. She's a vlogger on YouTube, creator and host of the Outdoor Minimalist podcast. She's an educator, an investigator, and influencer who is very, very passionate about proper stewardship of the wild spaces we use for recreation. Ladies and gentlemen, and all friends of our natural world, please welcome Meg Carney to the show.
Thank you for that lovely introduction. I'm excited to be here today and to flip the script because you were on my podcast previously.
That is true. And it was episode 25. On lead-free fishing, we had a ball doing it. Now, you're a big-time fisher, right?
I went fishing once, I think.
But what I really like about you is that you are very supportive of fishing. You know that we foot a lot of the bills for keeping this a lot of the rivers and lakes clean. And we put in a lot of money of our own accord to do so. So having your support means an awful lot. Well, listen, Meg, I want to just dive right into this, all right? Your book is fascinating. I've read it twice. I just love it. It encompasses so much. But what you've done is taken the 3 R's and expand them to 7. Now, what exactly was wrong with the 3 R's in the first place? Can you give us a little insight on that?
Yeah, I'll try to do this briefly, but there's a lot of history behind it. So reduce, reuse, recycle are the 3 R's that we are most familiar with. And those were released as like an environmental campaign. And they're very intentionally ordered. So the first one, reduce, is the one that they wanted people to be doing the most of. So they wanted people to first reduce their consumption in order to reduce their environmental impact. And if they couldn't do that, then the next option would be to reuse. And if they couldn't reuse their items, then the last resort should be recycling. And then, of course, after that, if you can't recycle, then you'd have to throw it away. But during the time period when this campaign was released, it caused a few issues for marketers and in large corporations, because it was during the time when single-use items, like single-use packaging, plastics, all that stuff was really on the rise. And there was a large push for convenience, especially in Western cultures. And so what marketers did then was they latched onto the idea of recycling, because it would allow consumers to feel like they were making a difference. And at the same time, it would still ensure that everyone was buying their products, because you could supposedly recycle those items and they would be able to be reused in a new life. Over time, this has become increasingly more difficult. Recycling has a fair share of issues, and the issues grew, I think, in the year 2018 when China stopped accepting all of our recyclables. And so we could no longer send a lot of the things we were sending before, like paper products, plastics, et cetera, overseas. We now had to handle in the United States, and it fell on individual municipalities. And the municipalities were not equipped for this change, especially because it happened so fast. And so during that short period, while they're figuring things out, a lot of things went to the landfill. But what a lot of consumers also don't know is that there's something called downcycling. And because we predominantly recycle plastics and use plastics really, really frequently in our food packaging, drink bottles, bags, et cetera, that is the number one product that is probably downcycled. And what that means is that, say you have a plastic bottle, like a Coke bottle or something, you recycle it, you feel good about it. But then what happens is that plastic material loses its integrity through the recycling process. And so that can then be recycled into something like a plastic bag, like a grocery sack or a bread bag, something like that. But then what do you do with that? Most places don't accept those loose, like bag recyclables. And then after that, they can maybe be recycled one more time if the system is in place, but more likely than not, they're just going to be thrown away. And so recycling is different everywhere around the country. I've lived in many locations that they don't recycle at all. And so it is a bit of a myth to me that recycling is beneficial.
Okay. And there is a term for that. When marketing people pass you along a feel good stories and leave out a lot of the details that you probably ought to know. And you taught me this term. Would you care to share it with the listeners?
Yes. It's called greenwashing. It is something that I love talking about. If you listen to my podcast, it's brought up all of the time. And greenwashing is in every industry. Any product that is marketed can be greenwashed. And essentially what that means is it is a marketing campaign that is convincing consumers that a product or procedure, anything really, is greener or more sustainable than it actually is. I can try to think of a basic example of this. One of the easiest ones, I think, is when we're looking at marketing language. And so like if they are explaining a product to be really vague in their sustainability practices, all they say is, this is a sustainable product. This is really eco-friendly. This is made from natural materials. It's biodegradable. A lot of these terms aren't regulated. So really any product or marketing company can use them to their discretion. And unless they're explaining exactly how that product is biodegradable or why it is sustainably produced, then more than likely it's greenwashing.
Awesome. Well, that is an eye opener for a lot of us, and but it also empowers in that now we know what to look for. I hate it when good-hearted people are seduced or tricked or whatever you want to call it into thinking they're doing, you know, right. And then it finds out they've been sold a whole cartload of bull cookies. It really makes them cynical. It hurts and it makes them cynical. And sometimes it makes people give up. So it's very, very counterproductive. Well, I'm going to run through your 7 R's. What are you drinking there?
It's a green smoothie.
A green smoothie. That's what it, you know. And I'm sitting over here with a Hams beer, which is also smooth. But I think that the semblances end right there. But we're going to run through her 7 R's, and then we're going to kind of bend them back towards fishing. And Meg is going to chime in with her ideas, or if I get off track or what have you, or she has questions about it. We're just going to kind of go back and forth here for a little bit. But this is one of the things that I thought was so bold and so astute, because what you're trying to do with your book and your podcast and your whole, with your life, okay, is to encompass this very complicated idea that has so many overlapping pieces and so many moving parts. And yet, like a watchmaker, you're able to bring it all together into something that seems very simplistic. Hey, I know what time it is. And yet, underneath the surface, there's a lot going on there that is actually making the idea work. So I think I got these in there, but it's not in any particular order, but I do have them in the same order as the book. So we're going to talk about reduce, refuse, my favorite. I even made myself a refuse t-shirt. Rethink, repair, rehome, or reuse, remove, and restore. So let's get started with reduce. Now, fishers can do a lot when it comes to reducing their waste. For example, overbuying. Who hasn't been seduced by that giant bag of Senkos? 36 Senkos. A Senko is a type of plastic, soft plastic bait. And you're starting out fishing, especially. You're just like a kid in a candy store. You see this thing that has 36 Senkos and five colors, and it's only $8. Well, do you really need 36 Senkos? And the problem with these cheap, what's called plastisol baits, is that they tear real easy. They break real easy. And so you'll go out and catch one or two bass on that Senko, and then your next cast, the back end of it splits off and just goes flying. And now you've, you know, and now you've got to take the front end off and throw it in your disposal unit in your boat or in your pocket if you're on shore. Even if you dispose of it responsibly, you're feeling kind of like a heel because a giant chunk of it went flying out into your environment. So like right there, suggest people look around. I prefer to buy soft plastics that are made out of elastomer. Z-Man, for example, has this plastic that they market under Elastec. It's actually a silicone base. It's 10 to 20 times stronger. So that same $8 that you would buy the 36 cheap plastisol baits, you're only going to get 6 to 8 Z-Man baits. And you think, oh no, big ripoff. But A, you're going to take better care of them because they're more expensive a piece. And B, they're not going to come apart as easily. And when they do start to show signs of wearing out, and I believe me, I have Z-Man baits. I haven't, I don't know that I've really retired one yet. Sometimes when they get so full of poke holes from the hook, I get kind of worried about it. So I'll move on to the next one. But I think I pretty much have every Z-Man bait I've ever bought. So there's that. Another one that really gets me down is cheap monofilament. And when I was on your show, we talked about the dangers of monofilament line. And one thing that anglers can do is go to a higher grade line, or you can, you know, trade out your monofilament for a copolymer line. That's going to be my next. Professional bass lady turned me on to gamma line, and I can't wait to try it out. And there's also a braided line. But even if you use monofilament, instead of buying the cheap Shakespeare or Zebco brands, the Walmart brands and so forth, step on up to a brand like Trilene XS, which is extra strength, or XL. And store your line in a dark place so it retains its strength and doesn't need to be replaced as much. And there's just all kinds of other things you can do. I mean, you can use, you know, your metal baits, your hard baits, and other highly durable lures, which I kind of covered with the plastics. But one of your themes is don't be afraid to pay for quality, because quality helps out in the long run. And that's what's so wonderful, is that we're talking short run, long run, and you move so fluidly between this stuff. So there's some of my ideas. We used to buy penny candy. You're way too young to remember penny candy, but it used to be a real trip to walk in with a quarter and come out with 25 pieces of candy, okay? And then when your dental bill shows up, your parents are just like, what? Okay, so you got that long run aspect of buying cheap. Reduce the sheer amount of stuff you buy. You care to add, or any example that it particularly gets on your nerves or that you embrace?
Yeah, sure. So I guess, yeah, I didn't put these in a particular order, but I did intentionally put reduce first because in case people didn't read through all of them, I wanted them to remember this one the most. And I will say, I think I mentioned this somewhere in the book, but one of my friends once told me that it's expensive to be poor. And that's because we can't always afford to buy the highest quality equipment or gear, or even the healthiest options when it comes to food that we eat, or anything really. And so I think keeping that in mind in applying these types of things to your life is important, that it's not going to look the same for everyone. And really just do the best you can and start with what you have. I know one thing that I did a lot when I was getting started in new outdoor activities, one, because I didn't have a lot of money, and two, because I wanted to reduce my consumption and figure out if I actually liked those things. Like if you're switching lures or something like that, maybe you don't know if you really like it, but you can borrow it from someone, go fishing with a buddy and try out his lures, and maybe you can see that they actually work.
Oh yeah, man. You know us somehow without actually knowing us. Borrowing your buddy's lures, whether he knows it or not, is a time-honored thing for sure. Did you see my white bomber with the black stripe? Nope. Didn't see it.
I'm not saying steal from your friends, you guys. I'm saying try them out and then you can buy them yourself when you decide that, yeah, these are actually better.
All right. Well, I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. So the next one, and this is my favorite one, is just refuse. Because I tell your friend to, it's all about balance, and it is expensive to be poor. You know, you want to buy a tarp to cover up your firewood or to cover up your motorcycle. You can't afford the one you want. You got to buy the one you can afford. And that's one of those ones that degrades in the sunlight. And 2 years later, you're out buying another one, which is bad for the planet. It's bad for people. It's bad all the way around. But what can you do? Jumping right back. Okay. So the next one I want to talk about is refuse and condition your mind to fight the allure of advertising. And we've already talked about this, but beware of greenwashing. Now, you are an insider. You have gone in behind enemy lines. You used to write ad copy, if I'm not mistaken. You used to do some advertising stuff.
Yeah, I used to be a copywriter.
Yeah, so you know kind of what it takes to tip that urge, to tip that scale. Consuming is a lot of fun. See, this is what I love. You have a lot of empathy for people. And this is why your book is such a good read, because consuming is a lot of fun up front. Yay, yay, yay. Oh, look at this. It's so fun to get something new. But refusal is gratifying. It's gratifying. It's like, oh, I see that big shiny rod. They want $180 for it. And I actually could afford that. But you know what? I just still like my old rod. My old rod still works just great. I don't know why in the world I would just go out and buy a brand new one when I've got a perfectly good one. So become anti-consumerist. You know, there's nothing wrong with buying that new when you need it. And especially when you buy new with an eye to durability, then you're actually helping out. But the trap is conspicuous consumerism, buying to fulfill an emotional hole, an emotional need, you know, acting out by buying in an ostentatious way. You need to ask yourself, do you really need the item, or are you just following a toxic Pied Piper at the expense of the world? A good old rod, grandpa's old rod, may not be in style with your buddies, but on the other hand, vintage gear, for example, has its own charms that are always in the larger sense, in the larger world.
Yeah, that one's one of my favorites too. And I think that it is really powerful, especially if you are someone that wants to align your purchases with your values and your morals, because it kind of forces you to look a little bit deeper into the advertising and marketing and into the full life cycle of an item. And it's one of the few ways in a capitalist society that lower class, like the rest of the 99%, can use the little power that they have and vote with their dollar. So eventually the market will follow where the consumer money is going. So it's one of the small ways that as a collective, we could potentially make a difference.
Well, this is another thing that I love about your work, your writings, your philosophy, is you're talking about actionable ways. I can't take on one of these big companies. I can't, as an individual, take on that company, but I can refuse to buy their stuff. Every small thing adds up. And one of the tactics they say is that, oh, you're not really making a big dent in this company's marketing, but that's just trying to get you to quit. Actionable ways. You give us all kinds of actionable ways to fight back. And that's what is important to me. Very, very important. Okay. So let's jump on down to number three, which I also love this one, rethink. And the reason I love this one is because I come up against this all the time as a proponent of lead-free fishing. Oh, lead free. I ain't doing that. You know, I'm happy enough. I catch fish on my lead gear and I'm not giving it up. And I have to say, well, what if I told you my gear works just as good and maybe even better? What if I told you that I'll give you more options? I'll give you more weight increments. I'll give you a lot of things that maybe you're not getting out of that lead product. Rethink it. Rethink it. It's vital. You asked me when we were together on your podcast about biodegradable lime, and I did some research. And like Mustad now has come out with biodegradable tough line made from a plant-based copolymer. It sounds like it's the real deal. You know, there are a lot of us old school types, you know, we committed sins because we didn't know any better. Now's the time to rethink, show the strength, show the ability to change one's ways. It's absolutely key. Rethink it.
Yeah, that one is probably my personal favorite. If I have to pick one out of the seven that I have applied in my life the most, that would probably be it. And like your take on it is a little bit different than like what my intention was, but I like it better. So another way that rethink applies to like a larger consumer culture is just interrupting your buying patterns. So like if you're used to window shopping or just like shopping online kind of like mindlessly, the intention is to like stop and think about the purchase before you actually commit to buying it. And like one question that I usually use for people is, how many times in the next 30 days or 3 months or even the next year are you actually going to use it? And then if you can't answer that very clearly or effectively, then table purchasing that product. And if it keeps coming up in your life, like, oh, maybe I want that, then maybe buy it. But that's like another way to approach the rethink aspect.
Well, that's, you know, it's fantastic. And I'll tell you another thing, what I call is shopping hypnosis. You know, you get into, Jane's Addiction would say ritual dehabitual. You know, we used to buy the liquid soap, and it's just like you automatically just get it. Oh, we, you know, you're making your list. We need liquid soap. And then this was years. This has been 2 decades. But Kathy and I are like, what are we doing? Look at all these bottles. Look at all this stuff. So now we buy this giant jug of cheap shampoo at the dollar store, and we've used the same liquid soap bottle for, I think, 5-6 years now, because we just put about an inch of that shampoo in the bottom, put water in it, shake it up, wash our hands with that. Soap is soap is soap. And now I'm just throwing away one big jug, which, you know, okay, that ain't the best, but it's a lot better than just going dreamy down the aisle, trying to get in and out of the store, and just hitting those same stock items that you just do, just once again, for convenience, or just because you've mentally trained yourself. So I guess rethink, break that consumer habit if you can do it.
Yeah. And I will say that it's not very easy to do. And especially right now in the United States, it's like a lot of consumers are really struggling mentally, and you might not have the mental capacity to like invest time into that or like energy into that. Like you're dealing with one or two jobs, you have a house full of kids, all these things. And then like the last thing you want to do is think about every purchase that you're making. So like I said before, like just do what you can and don't feel bad if you can't do everything.
Well, and that's what makes your message so palatable. And because, you know, people get their backup. They don't like being told, you know, that's another thing in the lead-free fishing. You know, I'm not going to tell you you're something less of a person because you use some lead lures, especially since I can't provide everything you need right now for your fishing. But there's always that flip side, and you lead people to it. And it's like, well, you get into this buying pattern, but if you can come up with clever little ways to bypass some of these rituals, some of these habitual buys, then you will actually start saving money, because thing of hand soap, $2-3. Now I can make 10 of them or more with my current method. Okay. So yeah, people are up against a lot, and you recognize that. And I think it's just wonderful. And do what you can, you know, do what you can. That's it. I don't know. We strum on the same chords a lot. You and I, we could accompany each other pretty well in the big band of life. Okay. So now move on to the next one. It's repair. And this is a hard one for me, because I couldn't fix a roller skate. I couldn't paint a doghouse and have it look right. I couldn't hardly do nothing, but I don't care if it's just duct tape. I don't care what it is. I will do my level best to repair stuff. My tent got a hole in it. This is one that you mentioned. Oh, I got to rip it. It's just get some of that tenacious tape and fix it. It can be done. If some big long zipper goes bad, then yeah, I don't know. That's hard to fix. And you should have read Meg Carney's review and bought a different tent, but you'll make that up next time. But if you can repair, go ahead and do it.
Yeah. And the first three R's are more like conceptual. And then the last four are like probably more action oriented into like how to actually take care of your gear. And like repairing is important to extend the lifespan, obviously. And if you don't know how to repair something, there's lots of people that you can learn from. YouTube is a great tool. I've learned tons of things on YouTube from other creators on how to repair my gear. And also it can save you a lot of money. Like you can, if you don't have a tent, I have found tents in a dumpster before and washed it, repaired it, like, and it still works and I can give it to someone else or I can donate it to someone that needs it. So there's lots of ways that you can learn to repair. And that's one of them that I have used is finding free gear or really cheap gear and then trying the repair methods on there instead of trying it on my really expensive stuff where I don't really want to break it more.
We don't want to break it more. Exactly. Yeah. Well, this is a wonderful segue and we've got to get on our pony and move right along because the 10-minute warning just popped up. But you've segued right into rehome, reuse. You know, this is what I get stuff out of people's trash. I love to go to garage sales. My wife is a professional picker. I mean, we are in the major rehoming, reusing. You know, when my daughter was here and she was growing up and she'd say, oh, Lydia was bragging about her new dress and how much it cost. And I said, well, that's all right. But I'm telling you right now, you're in a family where we brag about how little things cost and how good a deal we made on stuff. And it's a lot more fun for me to say, hey, you see this ultralight? I got it for $1 at a garage sale than to even to say, hey, I got a St. Croix rod, you know, for $200. I really is. So rehome, reuse, obvious for the most part. It's a double-ended thing. Donate that stuff. If you can sell it, that's fine. You need to sell it, that's fine. But give, sell, donate, all of it. And on the other hand, take a little pride in being clever, in being practical, in being thrifty, and let some stuff come on back to your home. Let it be where that stuff gets rehomed. Because I just lit up like a light when you said stuff about getting stuff out of the trash. That's awesome. All right, now remove. And I'm just going to, any one of these, we could sit and make a whole show segment out of. Okay? Yeah. But I want to get people introduced to you and your work and give you enough time to follow up here with some final words. But here's a couple tips. I have this friend. He's a listener of the Fish Nerds. His name is Dave Redden. He is Fishing South Maryland is his online presence on Instagram and so forth. And he always makes it a point to take stuff out of the environment. Our fly fishing correspondent, Rich Collins, has this thing about recovering tires. He's a crazy man. Both of them are. I've seen both of them with like a tire sitting on the front of their kayak and Rich rolling a tire down through the woods, you know, just to get it the heck out of his trout stream. And you, young lady, are absolutely bananas about removing. You have picked up enough doggy do to, I don't know, it would make quite an impressive amount and have cleaned up so many trailheads. Sometimes I'm just like, stop, just go and enjoy the trail. But setting an example is important. But I have the one, Jeff and I have the one t-shirt bag rule. We each have one t-shirt bag. And once that's full, we're done picking up after jerks. On the other hand, I pick up all the monofilament I find. Always pick up the monofilament I find because it is so dangerous, or any other kind of fishing line, you know. And this goes all the way up to organizations like Trout Unlimited pushing to have dams removed.
Sure, I'm definitely pro dam removal. I have a lot of thoughts on dams, but that also could be a whole episode in and of itself.
You're going to come on back.
but I don't know. I usually try to pick up a few things every time that I'm out. But yeah, if you don't have like a cutoff limit, like you're talking about, then that's all you're going to be doing outside because there's trash everywhere all the time.
Yeah. And I've asked you this and you've kind of explained it, but how do you protect that psyche? Because like one of the last things I saw you had on Instagram, it's one of those great things that I just love is when people buy a cooler, fill it with beer and ice, drag it out somewhere nice. You're on this place that had this beautiful view. Go out there, get S-faced, and then just leave the cooler, leave the cans, leave everything. This is a thing that, are you kidding me? You're whining that you don't have any money, but then you spend $30 on a cooler and just leave it. Now, it's way lighter now that it's empty, imbecile, than before. But for some reason, how do you keep the strength? How do you keep the, you seem so strong because you said stay positive, but it seems like there's an assault on your psyche everywhere you go.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's easy to fall into that anxiety and like stress and stuff, but I spend a lot of time like focusing on my mental health and like focusing on things that I can actually control. I learned a lot of that in years of therapy. So I'm definitely pro therapy person. And really that's all you can do. Like what can you control? You can't control other people's actions, but you can use your influence. And so that's generally where I try to align myself. It doesn't always work, but I try.
Well, keep on trying as much as you can stand to because it is having an effect. Okay, restoration. I'm just going to say this real quick. Unfortunately, on a higher level, whether it's the DNR or the Army Corps of Engineers or anything, there are restoration efforts that are actually counter-restorative. Outdoor writer John Gearock talks about after these floods in Colorado, all along his favorite stream. They cut down all the pine trees and used them to make erosion breaks. But now all the pine trees are dead. The roots are gone. The stuff that was actually holding this creek together for the past 100,000 years is gone because some engineer with more learning and less sense, you know, decided that this was a good idea. So whenever we restore, get out there and do it, but make sure you're supporting a restorative effort that is actually restorative. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and usually for those types of things, I try to work with like local efforts, you know, like land trust people who are actual like conservationists and ecologists.
Very good. Very good. Well, like I say, we could go on and on and on. This has been delightful. Okay. Now listen, she's just going to get cut off, folks, because I'm just going to give her the rest of the time. Hit the book, hit the vlog, hit the pod one more time, and then say whatever else you want to say, Meg.
Yeah. If you want to learn more about the book, I recommend going to theoutdoorminimalist.com. That has all the information on the podcast, the book, and other projects that we might be working on. Podcast is the best like learning resource I probably have.
Wonderful. Wonderful podcast.
Yeah, tons of different guests, lots of different topics, no matter the discipline in the outdoors. And then Instagram is at outdoor.minimalist.book. That's the social media I'm most active on. So if you want to stay up to date, that's a good way. The best way, though, to stay up to date is the email newsletter, which is sent out every Monday. And you can find that on the website, too.
And also on YouTube, Outdoor Minimalist Vlog.
Yeah.
You and your little puppy dogs driving around doing stuff. It's so great.
Yeah, I do vlogs and then some gear reviews. And soon we're going to be filming some like how-to content on repair and gear care.
Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Okay, any other comments?
I don't think so. Just thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
My name is Meg Carney, and I'm an outdoor and environmental journalist investigating the rise, pollution, and now regulation of a class of chemicals known as PFAS. Throughout this 10-part series, you'll hear from guests from all around the world who have a stake in the legislation, production, and use of PFAS chemicals. They'll answer questions like, what are PFAS?
PFAS is a very big group of fluororganic chemicals and polymers. They have a fully fluorinated or perfluorinated moieties in the structure, at least one, meaning that at least one carbon is all bonded to fluorine and not hydrogen.
Why is PFAS used so widely?
They are exceptionally high performance chemicals. They work very, very well at what they do. Primarily, they're designed as coatings or as films. They resist heat, they resist oil, they resist grease, they resist water, and they bond very tightly.
Why is PFAS dangerous?
Due to this bond, the fluorine carbon bond, they have what we call extraordinary properties. Carbon-fluorine bond is the strongest we know in organic chemistry. And that's one of the main reasons that PFAS are persistent. And that means that there are no known degradation products in the environment. They don't mineralize.
And how can we move forward as an industry?
What's been great about the outdoor industry is we're talking about it. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody is being quite open, I think, in sharing. Everyone's got their maybe little, some brand technologies and things that are more confidential, but broadly, people are talking and product designers are talking and material management is talking about it. And I think that's the key. That's how we'll accelerate towards the finish line is by not holding back information, trying to be open and share as much as we can.
Tune in March 2024 to hear this 10-part podcast series. As the host and creator of this show and Blackfooted Ferret Productions, it is my goal and mission to provide free and accessible information for all. We are an independent podcast and rely on listener donations to produce content like this. To donate, follow the link in the show notes. And thank you for making this production a possibility.